Okay. I told his niece and nephew after we got through night clubbing, I did go to work the next day. And then he sent a friend over, he wanted to come home, and I said, no, if he comes home, I'm going to have him arrested. So I wouldn't have anything to do anymore with him. And I didn't care if he killed me, because you know when you go so far and you don't care anymore. So I got divorced. And
so that would have been?
That was in 1934.
Oh, so this was when you were about right after the strike and when you were
in
the council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I wasn't working as an organizer yet. Even if I did speak over the radio and all that, but I wasn't a paid organizer then.
When you started, I understand that during the strike itself, all during the strike, they started this radio thing, a building for the strike. Were you speaking then on the radio?
Not so before. No, it was already when we had the union shop. So, we got this Mexican organizer, and he actually was not, he used to talk, you know, like a golden beak, we used to call him, because he really spoke nice. But he wasn't a union man at all. He was working there for the pay. He didn't care about the union.
Mm.
So he started his own club on the side, selling coffee, and had us all selling coffee in different places. And then supposedly he donated half an hour, radio hour. But we worked for it. Of course, the union didn't know about it. We used to go around selling coffee for him. And he started his own club, and then he wanted everybody to put money in the bank. Well, this has nothing to do with the union, but it's because that he lost his job there. He's working for the union, and in this club we have to put money every week in the bank, a dollar or whatever you could afford. And I had $20 in the bank, and he was going to have a Mexican, called the Casa del Mexicano, that means the Mexican's house, where all they would have a newspaper in Spanish, and nothing but Spanish people would meet and all that. And after I had about $20, and then one day he comes out with the idea that we better take the money out, and instead of doing this house for the Mexicans, to get the newspapers, because he used to be a newspaper man before. And I didn't like the idea. And I was on the executive board there too, so I
you were on the executive board?
No, I was. Mm-hmm. And he's the executive board in this club, the Mexican club. And my husband was in it too. And I don't remember exactly the date, but I was already working for the union. I better start from the beginning. We hired him as an organizer to speak to the Mexican people.
And was he the only...
The only organizer at the time. And he also had this radio hour. And that's how we got involved in the radio. And of course, we had to help him, like I told you, with the coffee. Then he wanted the money. So I said, I don't want to put my money in on newspapers. The money was supposed to be to build a house for the Mexican people to meet. And... Of course, I guess it must have been the biggest shock of his life, because there was about 500 people and I was the only one that had the nerve and sitting on the executive board, you know, in front. And I says, no, I will not put my money there. And he says, why not? And I says, because we didn't start putting money in the bank for that. We put the money in the bank for the house, for the Mexicans, not for your newspaper.
And the idea was to have a separate Mexican local?
No, he just was trying
a meeting place
for the Mexicans that had nothing to do with the union.
Oh.
See? So then when I went home, he got mad, and then a friend of mine came over and saw me, and she said, don't go back to the meeting because they're going to kick you out. So don't give him the satisfaction of getting fired, huh? La plancha está aquí, donde está la máquina de lavar. La primera que está ahí.
Que tiene.
Pues saque las dos porque creo que las dos sirven. So, I didn't go back to his meetings anymore, so the thing disbanded. And he was working as an organizer, and we were getting money together for different things. We had our separate account for the Mexicans and all that, and he was trying to get hold of it. And he got sick, so while he was sick, we took the money out, and he didn't get any, so he got fired. Because they found out that they called me, and I told them the truth. Yeah, I'm selling coffee because he says he's giving you the radio hour free, And it turned out that he was charging them some. I don't know how much, but they were paying. So they fired him. Oh, my.
Well, at this time, were you already in the union office or not?
Not yet.
Uh-huh. You were still in this, I was still organized.
Well, I don't know what shop I was by then, because they would send me different places. Yeah. So I don't remember now the shop I was in, but I remember that we got fired and we had no organizer. And they called me and they offered me the job. Oh. And I said, my God, I mean, how can I do that? I mean, but I took it. And of course I was getting a big amount of $20 a week.
So this would be about the first year, because the shops were already union. Uh-huh.
So that was during the time I got divorced too, because I got divorced later and I started working for the union. And of course I learned quite a bit from him, you know, and what I didn't know Bill Busick would teach me. And I used to translate leaflets. I didn't make the leaflets myself. Mm-hmm. I just did it translating.
And at that point you were the only organizer,
yeah. And then when we got another one later, his name was Gonzalez. I was getting, why did we get the second one? I don't remember, because I was already working in the office. And then we got somebody else by the name of Gonzalez. He was pretty good, but he wasn't very active, and I guess they didn't think he was earning his money, or I don't know what it was, so they let him go. And
now
I said,
what were your duties exactly then, Anita? What would you do every day?
We have leaflets. I would have to translate leaflets. They were made already in English, and I translate them in Spanish. Then, of course, I would accumulate the leaflets and put 100 or 200 or 500, and then get a committee and give each girl a bunch of leaflets to go in front of the shops to give to the people. And I also did the same thing. So then, of course, I talked to people. I visited people at their homes. And I never had a day. I mean, I didn't work 10 hours or 8 hours. I worked as long as I could. Mm-hmm. If I had to make a leaflet, I had to go early in the morning, because I didn't have the experience. So it would take me 2-3 hours to make a leaflet. That takes an hour any other time.
Now, was still an attempt to get the shop that weren't yet in the union?
That's right, because there was quite a few that were not in the union.
So you would go to the homes of the workers
at night,
in the shop?
Yeah, and get names from different people and go to visit them, and one would give me the name of somebody else, and they sign these cards, and when we get enough cards signed up, then we petition for an election. Or sometimes if we had most of the shop, then we'd go directly to the boss.
Mm.
But we didn't show him the cards. And
so what you were doing basically was, under the NRA, where you could call an election, you would go around to the home,
mm-hmm.
and get them to
petition. All the time, even after the NRA, and even mm-hmm. today they're doing the same thing.
So you go from around getting signatures.
Uh-huh.
And you were saying before that one of the real problems was with the American workers.
Well, see, because the Americans, I couldn't speak good enough English to get across my ideas. And the girls that they sent, Americans, I guess some of them had luck and some didn't. Of course, they organized Americans too, but I couldn't.
Is it that the idea of union was so foreign to them, do you think?
No, I don't think so. For me, it was because I couldn't make them understand, but I could make the Spanish understand. As an American went, I think she got good results, but I didn't. And where I got good results was with the Negroes and with the Mexicans.
And with the blacks, there was no problem about the union?
No problem. Yeah, the majority. And another thing, the blacks in those days, they were not operators. The only job they could have was pressers, because that's an awful hard job. Very, very few operators. And I don't know, I guess I was very friendly with them. See, I never had any class discrimination. Mm-hmm. For me, everybody was the same. And I guess that's one of the reasons I went out with them, and I ate with them and everything. So we were all very good friends. So anyhow.
Now, was there a change over then? Because initially, weren't most of the shops predominantly Mexican?
Even to this day, I think they are.
Oh.
They're predominantly Spanish. I won't say Mexican now, because now they have Puerto Ricans and Nicaraguans and South Americans.
But Latin.
Mm-hmm. And so, but I think that even today there's a big majority of Spanish speaking.
Now, were there problems around the whole issue of deportation? I mean, that's used so often.
Now it is, but in those days, we didn't have that trouble. See, this business of illegals came since the war.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started organizing, it was before the war.
So people weren't threatened with that if they signed up with union then?
No, the thing is that, they scare them, you know. You lose your job, and see, when they don't speak the language, they figure, if I got a job here, I'll stay here. They don't want to go and try a new job when God knows what kind of bosses. So they would stay. And the Spanish people, some of them, the more ignorant, they did work for less money because they cheated them.
How would they do it?
Oh, there was, for instance, there would be two people working on one card.
Oh.
Okay. So one gets paid and the other one, she wasn't there. But then they divided the money together. Or even to this day, they do this thing. They come in early in the morning, let's say 5 or 6 o'clock, but they don't punch the card until 8 o'clock. So they work 2 or 3 hours without punching. Or in the evening, they punch out and they keep on working.
Mm-hmm.
Or they take homework. And this is the thing that were the hardest. And then, of course, in the non-union shops, nobody knew how much the other one was getting.
Oh.
So, those who were smarter did, but the dumber ones didn't. And the Spanish people are more timid. You scare them easier. They're like, I would say, like the Chinese used to be the same way. I don't know if they still are. We have trouble. I could never organize the Chinese.
Oh.
Never.
Were there many Chinese workers?
There was a few, not too many, but there were some shops like where they make lingerie.
Oh.
That's where they would have mostly Chinese and Orientals or Japanese, whatever. And this, I couldn't do anything with them. But it was because I didn't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And those who spoke English, we got a few to sign up. And some of them turned out to be pretty good, too. But,
now, when you were going around as an organizer, this would be about 1935 then, I guess.
35, and I was an organizer in 35. Then, of course, I met my present husband later on, and I got married to him, and then I got the job as a business agent.
Well, when you were an organizer, were you just dealing with non-union shops trying to organize them, or did you also relate to the business agents in the union shops?
Well, I would have to report to them what was happening, and you know, if I'm organizing a shop, I have everything I did. I wrote it down, and I would bring it to the union, and then they bring charges and go to the labor board later, and sometimes with union elections. By some dirty trick they played, or sometimes we got the majority signed up. But see, the people sometimes would sign up a card, and we have almost the whole shop signed up, and at the last minute we would lose an election because the bosses would say that we are a bunch of liars, that the union does not give anything, and they used to make pictures of where we go around in Cadillacs, and the men would go around smoking cigars. And here we were just, at least I was just a person. So, and they accused us of all kinds of things.
Now, when you were an organizer, did you have to resign from the executive board then?
Oh, yeah. When I was a full-fledged worker in the union. And then we had a strike. And I was still an organizer, and they took me out of the office and they sent me into a shop. And the name of the shop was the 20th Century. And I started organizing the shop from inside. And the boss called me in his office, and he says that he understands that I am a union organizer and I'm trying to organize the shop. And I said, oh, no. I said, I was a very good union organizer, and I like the union. I said, but I'm married now, and my husband don't like the union. I said, so I had to drop the union. That was a lie, you know. So so he said to me, you know, he says, I don't believe you. He says, and Leopard never changes its spot. Well, anyway, we got the shop organized, and we pulled the strike. And I was getting paid by the union then. That's why I spent half of the time here and half over there. And when we called the strike.
And this was also dress?
Dresses, And to my surprise, we had a big majority signed up, and we didn't get them out. We got only a few. And even to this day, this is when I started fighting, because I was already married to Oscar, mm-hmm. and he had a family that they were supposed to be the aristocracy of Spain and from King God knows who. And they didn't want any trouble, and my husband said, whatever you do, don't get in jail or don't get arrested. Only before that, when I got married, I dropped the union.
What year was that?
1938.
Oh.
I dropped it just for a little while.
Well, this shop that you went into, this was before you were married, though, wasn't it?
Well, I worked in so many, I don't remember, because I was going from one to another, but I went...
Do you remember anything about the 1936 strike? Mm-hmm. Something like, apparently about 3,000 walked out.
But that was another
thing. Led by Local 96.
Yeah. The only thing, I was in charge of committees and to see that people were on the picket line, but I was only an organizer at the time, and I still didn't know too much about it. So...
Were you arrested during that strike?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Many times, but altogether, I know 37 times, but I don't know where...
Each time you would be kept just a few hours.
Yeah, right? Only twice I was found guilty in all the times that I was arrested. And one time I was going in an elevator. I get excited and I forget. The middle woman, almost as big as the elevator, she went in and I went in with her. And I started fighting with her. I told her to get out and she pushed me and we started fighting, and I'm small. So I scratched her here and she scratched me and beat me up and everything. And then she had me arrested. And so I said, I didn't beat her up, she beat me up. Anyway, I didn't lose the case because she was less beat up than I was. But the thing is that I had gone into the elevator with her. So that time, I think the union paid $5 fine. And another time I was following a girl. She was a young girl. And I grabbed her by the hair because she wouldn't stop and talk to me. And I didn't know that there was a car full of policemen in the corner. And they saw me. So all the Jewish fellows, they all came and made a circle around me, you know, to cover me up. But they couldn't because the police had already seen it. So they took me to jail, and that's another time I paid, well, the union paid a fine for me. That's the only two times that I got found guilty.
Were the other times, were the charges dropped?
They were dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Because either it was leaflets or nobody saw what happened, and it was my word against theirs or something like that. And let's see, going back.
So you stayed in as an organizer then until you married your second husband?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I met him when we were parading on Labor Day, and I was the leader of the Spanish-speaking group, and we had a bullfight, you know, in the float, and I had met him the day before. So, of course, after I met him, I fell in love, and they wanted to send me to school, to Brookwood College in New York.
Did.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
But it was either marry him or go to school.
Uh-huh.
And I figured, well, no, I better marry him. And then I'll maybe later on either go to school or learn by myself. So
what was he doing at that time?
He used to work as a sheet metal worker.
Was he in the union?
No. And he was not pro-union. He became union-minded years later. Took me a long time.
Weren't they organized?
Not yet.
Oh, I see.
And anyway, even if they had been, I don't think he would have been in the union, because I got him in the union, the Teamsters, many years later.
Well, did you have political arguments then?
No, exactly. The only thing it said, be careful. I mean, you're crazy. Don't let them beat you up, or don't let my family find out. Anyway, the first time that we had some trouble was this 20th century, and I stopped one girl not to go to work, and she hit me. And I fell down. So there was a policeman in the corner, so I called him and I said, arrest her because she hit me. And he says, I won't, because if you had stopped her, she wouldn't have hit you. So I got mad and she gave me a black eye. So I came home and I told my husband, I said, some scab beat me up. So he says, why do you let them? I said, well, you told me not to fight. I said, so I couldn't help it. He says, well, I didn't tell you to let them beat you up. I said, okay. I said, so I won't let them beat me up anymore. So the next day I went and waited for her. See? And she got the beating. But she didn't have me arrested, I guess, because she didn't get put in jail, so she didn't do it either. But we lost that shop. And the employer of that shop used to come out with a gun.
On the street?
On the street. And, of course, everybody's afraid of a gun. And some of these cats got some awful beatings. But we didn't get the shop. Even we tried all kinds of ways for years, and we never did get the shop.
Now, this is later. This would be about 1938.
I was in 38 already, so it was later than 36. I don't remember too much about 36. I was very active, but I don't remember anything extra. I remember we were organizing a shop by the name of Chick Lingerie, and one of the employers was a Spanish-speaking fellow, and he'd come in the middle of the picket line, and he started going like this with his elbows. And I went and I kicked him, and I kicked him in the wrong place, and he fell down, and I thought I had killed him. I tell you, I never got so scared in my whole life, because I had no intention of doing anything that bad. I just, my foot went in the wrong place. So I got arrested, no, not for me, for him. Right after that, they didn't know who it was. But I did get a big club on my leg from the police.
Mm.
And then a girl was going into work, and I kicked her in the shin. And they arrested me. But she figured I was a Mexican, so she told the policeman when they asked if they should take me in. She says, no, she says, it's my own race. I'm not going to do anything about it. So I didn't get arrested.
So even though they were scared, there was some feeling of identity.
Oh, yeah, but see, I had worked in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I had worked only, the union had sent me deliberately to organize the shop. That's the place where I gave out the leaflets with Roosevelt's picture. And the boss gave us a speech that we should all vote Republican. And anybody that voted Democratic would be fired. Well, how would he know how people voted? But anyway, the next day I took leaflets all over the shop. So they wanted to know who did it. I don't know who did it. The only thing is when they wanted to take my leaflet away from the machine, I said, no, you know, don't take mine. So I put mine on my head like this. And of course, I got fired later on, but they found some other excuse that not for union activity, mm-hmm. either I didn't know the work, which they were lying because I didn't know too much about foreign.
Now, Anita, in most of Dakota's books, she talks about the fact that in 36, when the General Executive Board met in Los Angeles, that there had been problems with, there was an attempt to form a Mexican local and an Italian local, but the union wouldn't let that.
Well, that was the union's fault, because in New York they have a union local. The local, I think it was local 22 or 88. Anyway, they had an Italian local.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the Mexicans wanted a Mexican local. Somebody had told them they would get one. And that's how, by the way, I happened to become the first chairman of the Spanish group, but it wasn't a local, it was just a separate group.
I see. But you've been promised a local?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
And then they say that it's better to have only one, and the Mexicans resented it quite a bit for a long time.
Not getting a separate one. So you didn't have the Mexican local?
No.
In other words, they didn't have your own offices or anything? It was
no. Offices. The only one that spoke Spanish was myself, and then of course they had to. Later they have two office girls for me to take dues and, you know, when people come in
mm-hmm.
to the office. But they never did get the local that was promised to them.
And why do you think that they wouldn't give it to them?
I don't remember. I wasn't in those meetings. They said that it's not necessary and that they make a division and things like that.
Did you resent that?
No.
Mm-hmm.
To me it was one union. I didn't care if it was 88 or 66 or 96, as long as it was union. See, to me it didn't make any difference.
Well, what proportion of 96 was Mexican, do you think?
Well, I would say about 60%,
mm-hmm.
at least, because mm-hmm. it was majority Spanish speaking.
And but on the other hand, even though they were the majority of the union members, they were not didn't hold office, did they?
No.
Was there resentment about that?
No, because we couldn't get them, because the married women say they have to go home and cook and they didn't want to be bothered. They were all good union members and they'll come to a meeting, and some of them didn't even come to meetings, but they didn't have the time. And we couldn't find anybody that speaks speaks both languages and was alone. Or at least they didn't, they got a couple later, but they didn't left for some reason. Either they get married and the husband won't let them or something.
So for several years, and you were the main spokesperson for the Latin.
Yeah, and when I finally became a business agent, my husband finally made me quit because he didn't like this idea. I was spending all my time at the union. So I quit, not only the union, but quit working.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't afford it, you know, with his pay, so I had to go to work. So I was ashamed to go and tell the union, so I went and got myself a job in a blouse factory, making blouses. But I wasn't very fast, so I did exactly like everybody else. They used to take homework. And then finally I thought to myself, well, now I'm a damn fool. I'm doing this and I'm against all this. So I saw Scott, Harry Scott was his name, and I told him, I'm working in an open shop. And he says, what's the matter with you? Why are you working in an open shop? Why don't you come and work in the union shop? And I said, well, why don't you come back to the union? So I said, well, my husband doesn't want it. So anyway, I went home and I told him. I said, you know, I think I'm going back to the union. He said, why? And I said, because as long as I have to work, at least I'll work at something that I like. So immediately, of course, they put me back to work in the union.
Ah, okay.
See, I was out.
Then that's already up to about 1939 or something.
Yeah.
Now, during, let's go back and a couple things for that period. What I'd like to do is probably stop for today with that period before you became the business. You weren't the business agent yet.
No, I was an organizer. I was even a switchboard operator at the union.
At the union?
Yeah. I mean, they had different things for me just to keep me there, I guess. But I spent most of my time at the union. I had no social life outside of the union.
That's what I wanted to ask you, was even before you were married, where your social life was? Was it primarily union?
Union. And after I got married, it was union. And all the years I was married, mostly it was union.
So all your friends were
most of
the union?
Yeah.
And would you and your husband associate with other couples from the union, or
when I started working for the union, of course I associated with the officers of the union. While I was still a worker in the shops, we didn't associate with. We didn't go out too much.
Mm.
My husband drank a lot, and I hated to take him out where he would get drunk.
Mm.
So I kind of, if most of the time I went by myself.
And he was not a jealous man like that.
No, and if he was, he never showed it. If he was ever jealous, he was jealous of the union itself, because I spent too much time there. And he says that I love the union more than I love him. My son says the same thing, so I don't know.
Now, did you associate at all then with the Croatian community?
Not too much. For years I didn't associate with them. Oh, I met them once in a while, maybe for New Year's or two, three times a year, or that's all. But most of my friends were Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones from the union.
Mm-hmm.
The Croatians I started associating, I would say about 20 years ago.
Oh, so fairly recently.
Yeah.
One of the things that Rose Pagoda talked about was that between 33, when the local was formed after the general strike, and when she came in 40, that there was a kind of laxness in the union. And people were really kind of goofing off, in effect.
Well, that's what she says, and of course they say the difference about her. We had, when she left, then we had Feinberg, the Vice President Feinberg. I worked under him. Then we had, after Feinberg came Mr. Levy.
Mm-hmm.
And with Levy I worked until he finally resigned and he died. And then I kept on working, and Levy's the one that put me in as a business agent anyway.
Well, did you feel that there was any kind of puffing off in the union itself during that period?
I did, because what I was doing, I was busy all the time. If others were slapping off, I don't know. But I was busy. I think I was the busiest person in the union.
And were you, up until 1938, 1939, were you still the only organizer?
The Spanish speaking, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had later, we had hired some Jewish fellow that spoke Spanish. This was a Sephardic Jew. But
his Spanish must have been very different.
Yeah, and he didn't last very long. Mm-hmm. And he was not a business agent, he was an organizer.
Then how many other organizers? You were the only Spanish-speaking organizer,
yeah.
And then there were how many other organizers?
Oh, they had quite a few. Sometimes they would have 10, 12,
mm-hmm.
6, no less. At the end, they had Chaim Elstein and Jack Spindler. Those were two Jewish organizers. And I was a Spanish organizer and business agent. They were organizers and they made them business agents also, so we did the same thing. Then there was another one, Jack Sonis. He was a business agent only, but he did anything, he did any organizing.
Mm.
Then there was another that by the name of Jack Hess, and he was an organizer. He was Jewish, married to an Italian girl. But he was a college, so he didn't stay with us too much.
Mm.
And now we were separated from, by this time we were three different locals. In 96, it was one local, local 266, the sportswear where I was, and local 65 at that time was the clockmakers. So it was three different.
Oh, I see. When did you go from 96 to 266?
Right after 266 started.
Oh, which was okay,
I don't remember the year. Let's see, 41, I don't know, 40 or 41.
Let's see, I think it was in the 40s?
Yeah.
So up until
then it was local 96.
You were in 96.
Yeah.
Now, when was the first time that you met Rose Cotoda then, Anita, and what did you think about her?
I don't remember very, the only thing I know is this is kind of crazy. I didn't like her. But I didn't find out until years later the reason why I didn't like her. See, you talk to her, and she'd look and she'd smile, and or she'd answer you something, you know, and it would have nothing to do with what you said. So I thought that she was ignoring me. And so I figured she don't like me, well, the heck to her. But I didn't find out that she was deaf.
Oh.
See?
And even as a fairly young woman, she
was
deaf?
She was deaf. And she had some hearing aid, and the way she fixed her hair, but I never noticed that she had a hearing aid. And of course, when I talked to her, she wouldn't pay any attention, and I thought, well, she don't care, or she thinks I'm dumb, or I don't know what, until way later.
Oh.
And then when I found out that she was already gone from here.
Oh.
And I went to a convention in Florida, and I met her, and I remember she went and introduced me to some people. She says I was her protege.
So you first met her then during the 33
years? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you think she was a good organizer?
I think, oh yeah. Oh, and she was, see, to be organizer, you can't be just a boss and tell what to do. You have to get them between the people. And she was one of us. Like, you know, if there was a fight and she'd be right in the middle of it, and she picketed and she visited people at their homes and went to lunches and different things. She didn't care. She would the men are more, as soon as they become business agents, the cutters or pressers in the shop, they get a job in the union. The majority of them immediately changed. You think that they graduated from the highest college in the United States or something. So the girls always, you know, women usually will go to women anyway. And I was the crying towel, they used to call me, of the girls, because everybody come with me, to me with their complaints.
And there was a lot. There was a closeness among the women.
Yeah. And I even to this day, I still think that they should have more women organizers and business agents than they have been.
Do you think, I mean, one of the things of all the unions was that in the needle trade, the women were the majority of the workers, but the men were the ones who were the organizers
that's
and
right.
The officers.
Exactly.
Do you ever feel, do you think the other women felt any?
I'm sure they did, I did too. And not only that, but the men were getting better pay.
As in the shop, you mean?
Not in the shop, because it was most piecework, except there was a few crooks that would be subcontracting or weren't supposed to do it. But when you work for the union, I know that the men were getting more money. For instance, in my case, I work already as a business agent, and there was two business agents only, one woman and one man, myself and this Jack Sonis. And in those days we were only divorced a week, which, you know, they sent me someplace to organize or something, and when I came back, somehow I found out that he was getting $35 a week. So I went and I asked, how come he got more money than I am getting? And I got so mad at sending him a letter of resignation, and I told him if I don't get paid the same way as the man, business agent, Monday I'm going back to the shops to work where I'm not going to be paid by my sex, but by my work. And oh, they gave me hell, and they told me I shouldn't have written, and they wouldn't accept my resignation, and I got back pay, and I got the same wages you did. See, it was, there was only two of us, that was a local, was small then.
But that was in the
40s
then?
And yeah, because uh-huh. I was already a business agent.
Was there ever any thought, you know, in some of the unions, in the Amalgamated, for instance, in some cities in the 20s, the women formed separate women's locals, so that they would have more control themselves. Was there ever any talk about that?
No, they not. Until this woman's liberation came up about, when was it, 5 years
mm-hmm.
ago? Because I went to two of their meetings and I got sick. So otherwise I would have been in it too.
At the union this time?
No, no.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the union.
Oh. When was that?
I remember.
About 1970 or so?
A little bit later. I know we sent a letter to Sylvia Woods, and he wanted to know if it was 5 days later on. He agreed, I guess, that.
What was the meaning?
I don't even remember the case. And I don't remember the names. The only one that would remember the names would be another business agent that worked later, that Nita Hamilton, because she stayed in this women's liberation group, and I didn't.
So this was women from the union that was
forming? From different unions. From different unions. We were all
this isn't when they formed the Coalition of Labor Union Women. It was before that.
I guess.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe you can think about it, and when we get to that the more recent time period, we could talk about it.
I can. I won't be able to remember names because I tried before, but I would call Mae Hamilton. I think she remembers.
Oh, good. Because then.